All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 8th, 2007 Carrboro Board of Aldermen budget work session. Work session means that the men on the board are not required to wear ties. John, I don't know if you knew that, but we'll start our meeting tonight. Actually, before we begin our regular printed agenda, I have two matters really quickly that I would like to take care of, which I'm going to take the podium, and Ellen Perry, if you'll join me, please.
Yes, Ellen.
I'm going to start with a proclamation, mayoral proclamation, and then I'd like to recognize Ellen Perry to discuss a sort of related but different issue. Whereas, although Orange County offers many opportunities for people with disabilities, some of our citizens remain unaware of their capabilities and aspirations. And whereas Orange County understands that an unseen disability does neither constitute a lack of ability, nor does it undermine the need to receive prompt and courteous assistance when such is required. And whereas the Disability Awareness Council and RAIN, an organization called Real Advocates Now Emerging, works to promote options for people with disabilities to have a self-determined life as they want to and enjoy an environment free of barriers imposed by architecture, attitude, and or a lack of opportunity. And whereas Orange County recognizes that persons with disabilities are a resource that cannot be overlooked, when fully included in community events and activities, strongly promoted. And whereas Orange County acknowledges that all people have abilities, talents, and dreams, and with respect and acceptance, individuals with disabilities, whether they be mental or physical, can enjoy total integration into our society. And whereas disability is a natural part of the human experience and in no way diminishes the right of individuals with disabilities to live independently, claim self-determination, make choices, and fully experience the economic, political, social, cultural, and educational mainstream of American society. And whereas the Disability Awareness Council promotes that through the use of assistive technology and the provision of any and all documentation in alternative formats, both children and adults with disabilities can gain quality access to community life. And whereas Orange County, and more particularly Carrboro, believes that everyone in the community can play a central role in enhancing the lives of people with disabilities, especially when the necessary support services are provided. And whereas the Disability Awareness Council stands firm in their commitment to taking the appropriate steps to encourage equal access to the provision of promise for opportunity for all individuals. And whereas the Disability Awareness Council and RAIN advocates advocate strongly for the safety and welfare of all persons with disabilities by encouraging them to take all precautions within their immediate surroundings to not only eliminate the chances for unnecessary injuries, but also to devise a fully processed emergency action plan of escape in case of a natural disaster. And whereas the Disability Awareness Council feels it is necessary that all agencies coordinate their efforts to effectively and efficiently provide the highest levels of incident management in that they standardize their language, command structure, personnel qualifications, and action plans, as well as uniformly designate incident facilities during emergencies or disasters. And whereas Orange County and Carrboro will commit to utilizing their licensed amateur radio operators who will be on the alert to provide emergency radio communications when necessary and free of charge in the interest of the citizens of our community. And whereas we are proud to be a champion of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which will be celebrating its 17th anniversary this year. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, the mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim that May 8th through 15th is Disability Awareness Week in the town of Carrboro and urge our citizens to utilize all services available to become more aware of the needs and capabilities of people with disabilities, this, the 8th day of May, 2007.
Yeah, I can copy that.
Hold on.
I'm sorry. Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
There is an issue on the table in front of you all that we need to address. The President of the United States did not sign the World Disability Rights Act.
That is a surprise.
He took the words right out of
my mouth. Surprise, of course. So what I suggest everybody doing is to write to their congressman, to write to the president, to encourage him to sign it. And what I would like you all to do, especially Mark and I, to do is to write a letter to President Bush. Or make a resolution or something. Do whatever.
I have some information from Alan, which I will circulate to the board about this issue.
I gave him all of
them. Oh, everybody's got a copy. Yeah. Excellent. So if it is the will of the board, I will work with Sherman, and I will work with Alan to draft a letter to President Bush and also to our members of Congress regarding this issue. And it's important to the people of Carrboro and, indeed, literally the whole world.
Please. And tell him if he doesn't respond, we are sending Ellen up to talk to him.
By golly.
Okay. We'll hey, Mark, Mark will assist me, or John, or somebody.
Okay. We'll do it. All right. Thank you very much, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. All right. With that, we'll turn to our printed agenda. Responses to board's questions from May 1st, Mr. Manager.
Okay. The board did ask several questions at the budget presentation last week. We have handed out written responses that you should find at your places. If it's the board's pleasure, we're prepared to have the individual department heads give you all a brief overview from each of the questions that you all raised, and they will be brief, and we can go from there if that works for everybody. And I want to, again, thank particularly our department heads, but we have a number of other staff folks in the back of the audience here tonight out of interest in the process. Folks around the table were more strongly encouraged to be here.
Mr. Manager, actually, before we continue with that process, I neglected to say, I meant to have it on my list here. I just wanted to point out, I wanted to thank Anita McNair and our Recreation and Park staff, and indeed our entire Recreation and Park staff, and dozens and dozens of volunteers who helped to make this past Sunday's events at Carrboro Day such a success. And we really appreciate you arranging the good weather. I think it was a Carrboro Day to be really tremendously proud of. I know I saw most, if not all, of the board members there enjoying the events, and just wanted to thank our town staff and our excellent town volunteers for all the work that went into that.
Thank you.
Okay. The first item was a request to take a look at some minimal level of recycling at our town parks. And George Size, and George, you're welcome to keep your seat, but if you'd like to come up there, you can do that as well. Oh, you got slides. Okay. Well, I don't think anybody else has any slides. So.
We usually don't let him make presentations, so I guess we'll have an exception tonight for you, George.
It's a brief presentation. Any questions? That's it. That's all I have. Just quickly, we were asked to take a look at providing a minimal level of service for recycling in our parks. Of course, currently we do not have anything. If folks care to recycle, they would have to take it to a drop-off center or take it home with them and use their curbside recycling. We did a quick check as to what some other towns are doing, and you see that on, I believe, the list we have. Some are, and again, it's on a small scale. So what we're proposing is also on a small scale as a pilot program here to kind of feel our way with this. Not to mention we're limited. We're lucky that we have 9 of these containers here that I just pointed out that are left over from a previous project, and they're cut to handle bottles and cans. And our plan is to place them at higher usage areas where we currently see the items. And unfortunately, a lot of times the items are not making it over here even, so we hope they make it to here. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see whether we really have that kind of usage. So we're planning to doing it at the higher usage park, placing there near ball fields and the shelters at Anderson and Wilson. It should be enough to cover to at least get us started. There's minimal cost to get started. We have to buy some larger trash can bags to handle the materials. And then exactly how we'll dispose of the material yet, or how we will remove it from the park, whether we'll have our own crews or possibly arrange something with Orange County Recycling to come to the park, we're not really sure. Those are details to work out. But with this, we hope to determine usage, see whether there is some additional labor that will be required, figure out where the best placement for the cans, and then maybe perhaps find out some unintended consequences as well. We didn't have a chance to check with the other municipalities to see is the good or the bad of this, but we think this is a way of getting started. And then it would be a program for 1 year, and then we would reevaluate it, so whether expand or discontinue or modify. That's it.
All right.
Yeah, I would suggest to the board that we get a report, say, around October when it's getting cooler and we're having a lot of sports from now until October, just to see how much it's how effective it is. That's just a suggestion, or, you know.
I think that would be helpful.
And George, you were talking about Anderson and Wilson. Are those the only two sites that you're looking at?
Well, we're limited by the 9 containers. If we try to expand it, we'll have to buy some containers, and that's not impossible. You know, they're $50-$60 a piece.
Oh, no,
but I was trying to start. We have something within a couple of weeks here, and the active season is now, so we could get going. And we're looking where there are ball fields and picnic shelters in the higher usage. Yes.
I wonder if it would be good to put in the when folks reserve, let's say the shelters through the parks and recreation, that part of, you know, the cleaning and the set of rules is to recycle, so that they know that those containers are there for a purpose. Just include that, because since we didn't have them before, it's not required, but I think we should require it.
That's a good idea. I don't know how we'll enforce it, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. All right. Are there any other questions about this matter? If not.
Thank you.
Thanks.
George.
Sorry we kept you so long. It's Tom George.
The next two items involve health insurance questions. The first was asking us to look into the possibility of offering a health insurance stipend in the amount of $1,500 for the 7 current permanent part-time employees. And the second part of that issue was to look at projected cost for subsequent years for doing such a stipend, and whether or not that stipend could be sheltered through our flexible spending plan. And Desiree White, our HR director, is prepared to respond to those two issues. Desiree.
For the first question, staff did investigate the possibility of providing a payment to permanent part-time employees. We did find out that the payment is possible. However, it would be paid as taxable income. The amount for the 7 permanent part-time employees at the recommended cost of $1,500 per employee would cost $10,500. That amount has not been included in either option that the manager recommended in his budget. If the board does choose to go with this particular option and offer the stipend, we would want to make clear that it is only available to permanent part-time staff and not to our permanent full-time employees. The third question, Alderman Brown specifically asked us to look at the projected cost. Of course, that would be up to the discretion of the board. It could be tied to the Consumer Price Index, medical trends, or any other index that the board wishes to tie that to. Of course, it could be based on budget conditions from year to year. Specifically with the medical insurance premiums, they cannot be sheltered under our flexible spending account. So we did find out that as well.
Are there any questions for board members about?
And could you refresh my memory on the cost of the health insurance premiums? Is it about the same? It's the same amount if we paid the health insurance premium.
The same as?
It's same as if we gave them a stipend.
I think actually the stipend was a bit more.
No, there are a couple of issues. One is, now the cost is considerably more. The cost is over $5,000 per employee. The more important issue is the long-term impact on rates.
Okay. Just wanted to remember, have it all in my mind. Thanks.
The next one was Alderman Gist had asked that the mayor forward a letter to both federal and state leaders expressing the board's concern about problems with the health care system. Mayor, that's in your corner, and we weren't involved in that, so...
We're almost done with drafting that.
All right. The next item, which is not numbered but would be number five if it were, is that Alderman Coleman had asked staff to look at the possibility of eliminating the reservation fee for the use of town commons for 4 hours or less. And Anita Jones McNair, our Rec and Parks Director, is prepared to respond to that. Anita?
In your packets, I wanted to provide some information so you can consider these items in your deliberation of this particular request. We anticipated $2,500 for proposed revenue for next year at Town Commons, and you have the breakdown in front of you, and pretty much the anticipated revenue was based on 4 hours or less. Within the past 2 years, we've had three reservations that were over four hours. The initial proposed fee schedule included $100 for 0.0 through 4 hours and $150 for 4 hours or more. But we would like the board to consider amending that particular request and consider an option for the community wherein we would have free. The reservation would be free for up to 4 hours, providing they would not need electricity and they would not need staffing, because at this point, for each reservation, we do incur a cost for staffing and for electricity if they decide to use electricity. So we're suggesting that we have free reservation for... if no money is exchanged, electricity is not included, and we do not include staffing. For those reservations from 0 to 4 hours where staffing is needed, as well as electricity, we are suggesting that it be $75, and that will offset the cost that the department and the town would incur. And then for reservations over 4 hours, we are suggesting that the 150 stay.
Yeah, I think the staff proposal is very responsive to kind of the spirit of what I was suggesting, although I don't think it's necessary to lower the fee from 100 to 75 if we are providing staff services. But I think, you know, I think the idea that had come up before was that the town commons could be available for citizens to use sort of somewhat on their own initiative with a reservation. And so I think the proposal here that there would not be staff or access to town hall in those cases makes a lot of sense. Did you rerun your numbers for what your anticipated revenue would be? Like how many events would still be under the paid reservation, as opposed to how many would not need staff assistance? Or
well, as I mentioned, the $2,500 was the anticipated fee. And so at this point, all of those fees or should I say all of these considered reservations would be under 4 hours. So that $2,500 would go away should they elect not to use staffing.
Okay, so you have no way of anticipating that?
No, we really don't. At this point, we do not have any reservations beyond the end of May at this point.
I was also
We do have reservations through September for the really free market, but other than that, we don't have any reservations beyond the 1st of June.
Okay. I was also curious, given that the trend has been $600 or $700 per year over the last few years, how you got, and I guess it's been more than that this last year because of the really, really free market,
yes,
but how you got up to 2,500 anticipation for the coming year.
Yes, and the 1,800 is a breakdown of including the really free market and a few other community events.
Okay.
Let me mention one other thing that I don't think Anita mentioned that's in the written material, and that is the suggestion is that for if the board chooses to allow free access through the reservation process for less than 4 hours, that those free reservations be limited to any one group to no more than once a month for concern out of one group potentially wanting to monopolize a space to the exclusion of other groups that might want to use it, that there's no charge.
Makes sense.
Anita, do you have any concerns, or how did you address, or how would you address the question of monitoring cleanup or security issues, and what you would ask participants reserving the space if it were free but with no staff present? How you deal with that? And I guess part of what I'm asking is, if somebody reserves the space and when they without any staff supervision, and then they trash it, and somebody's got to come back and clean up,
sure,
or maybe it's a bigger event than had been anticipated, and Carolyn's folks have to show up, how would we deal with that?
Well, at this point, and I want to mention the fact that at our other parks, we don't have staffing. And through the reservation process, we go through that with them, that they are required to pick up after themselves because we do not have people coming through the parks. And for the most part, we've never had a problem. But if we do, then certainly we try to get somebody out there to clean it up. Now, in the past, we've had a fee of $50. If you wanted additional attention right before your event, you could pay $50, but no one has pretty much taken us up on that particular cost. But at this point, we have not had a problem, so we would go through that as part of the guidelines.
Do you have a provision to backcharge people if, for example, they do leave a mess?
Not at the parks. Now, for instance, at the Century Center, yes, we do. We do have a fee that if they did not, you know, do the things that they were supposed to do. So we've never had a problem, so we've never put one in place.
I mean, I guess if typically it hasn't been a problem, maybe there's just no reason to,
right,
to deal with it. On the other hand, it might be just nice to have that provision in there so that people have an understanding that if they do leave a mess, that you bought some public works time.
The other option would be to consider that next time, if we had a group did that they wanted to reserve it, they'd have to pay the fee.
I think that's reasonable. Mm-hmm.
That sounds logical to me. Okay. Anything more on town commons fees right now?
I'm just wondering if there's a way to kind of test this out and give it, you know, a dry run to see what it looks like. I look at this, and on one hand, I really like the idea of making town commons available in the same way the parks areas are available and without the fee. On the other hand, I look at the $2,500, and I'm looking at a budget where there's few places to, you know, have revenue generation. But if we're not sure how much could potentially be lost, it's only a guess.
Right. Well, I would certainly think that if we lift the reservation fee, we would have a lot more reservations than we probably would if the fee stayed intact. One of the things I want to also mention, this is, they don't have to officially go through the reservation process, just like they don't have to officially go through the reservation at the parks. If they spontaneously just want to go and participate, you know, enjoy the park, they don't have to do this, you know, go through the official reservation process. So this is to make sure that they, say, have that area, you know, and they're providing invitations, inviting people, and that kind of thing. So understand they still can come and, you know, and enjoy the playground and other parts of that particular facility.
Unless somebody else has observed.
Yes, exactly.
Which is, and I mean, that really is the point of, at that point, that's the real point of having a reservation.
It is.
Right.
You have it to yourself or whatever. To your activity, I guess. Joel, did you?
I'm beside that.
No. Okay. Privilege license.
Okay. Yeah, the next item is Alderman Coleman had asked about the possibility of making some changes in privilege license, creating a different kind of a tier system, and Bing Rennig, our assistant town manager, will report on this item. Bing?
Okay. You were referring to the grocery tier system. Just so that you all know, there are fees that we must charge by state law. We have no control over their fees. The gross receipt system is locally generated, and some businesses pay both depending on the product or services they provide. If we were to adjust the gross receipts tier, my estimate, based on the number of businesses that reported earning $100,000 or less, if we were to change the fee structure to what Alderman Coleman recommended, we would lose about $1,655. One small caveat I would make to that is sometimes new businesses come in and they're not comfortable making an estimate about what they earn. So they pay the minimum fee, which would be $50 for $0 to $100,000 earning. It is possible we could lose more revenue than this, but I think this is a fair estimate based on the count of businesses that were earning gross receipts in this current year, which was about 100 businesses. And I believe you asked about our thoughts on what it would take to implement this change, and it's certainly doable. I think it could be a bit cost prohibitive, but it is doable. So I don't know what your comfort is.
Let me just add one comment to that.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do almost anything as long as it's legal. There is a certain amount of administrative cost involved in this process, and to charge a fee as low as $10, you have to wonder about if it's worth doing. You know, we felt like the $50 fee is kind of the minimum that makes it worth the effort to even try to collect it. Much below that. And it takes basically, I think, being the same amount of work to collect the $10 fee as it does for the $50 fee or the $75 fee.
Yeah, I think one point was missed in what I was asking last week, which was I was really asking if you could look at the numbers and come up with something that was revenue neutral in terms of a breakdown. And I apologize if I wasn't clear enough on that point. And kind of looking at the numbers of businesses in this category, it's not necessarily, you know, nothing jumps out in terms of breaking up into quartiles like this of how you might achieve that. Although, you know, I looked at, you know, we were sitting here at 20, 40, 60, 80, gets you pretty close. I guess, you know, Steve, in terms of what you're suggesting in terms of whether it's worth doing at a lower level, you know, kind of my thinking was that, you know, by making it more gradually increase to a higher level across that range, you kind of get it so that your total revenue within that sector of the business pool remains the same. So that's kind of how I was looking
at it. Yeah, I guess we did misunderstand, because I remember your comment about revenue neutral, but I think we understood your comment to be that what you were suggesting would be revenue neutral, and that's where
we missed it. Yeah, no, I wasn't. I was asking if you could look at it.
And it's not a lot of money. I mean, the whole gross receipts privilege license is not a lot of money. However, we have so few revenue streams available to us that we hesitate to suggest to the board that we do anything to impact any of them in a negative way because the choices are few.
So let me jump in. Let me make sure I understand this. So right now, the fee, if your gross receipts are basically the bottom tier is $100,000 in gross receipts and below, and the fee is how much for that?
$50.
Okay. I don't guess I have anything to follow that question up with. I'm just trying to understand it.
Can I ask a question? Were you trying to generate revenue or?
No, I was trying to do something revenue neutral, but you know, I was trying to think from the perspective of someone who's just starting a business, and you know, businesses, as we know, often don't necessarily even make money at all in the first year or two, and that there's a lot of obstacles to starting a new business, and you know, just to minimize what the town, you know, particularly for those startups that might be, you know, people who are really, you know, in a kind of tenuous position getting something going. And, you know, in businesses that we hope will grow in the years ahead. But to just sort of, you know, and obviously the difference between $50 and 10 or 20 or whatever it might be in real terms is not a big amount. But I was thinking in terms of the symbolic import of something that might be viewed as like a token payment as opposed to, you know, another $50 in whatever the whole litany of costs that a new business might have to get set up.
Can I follow up? I guess from the manager. When was the last time we raised that fee?
In 2000.
It's about time to raise it again. So it has been, I mean, $50. I think it's really, really reasonable for you can make $50.
Alex and then Jackie.
Just really briefly. I mean, I think I understand the impulse, but you know, frankly, if you came to the SBTDC and told them you couldn't come up with $50 for the privilege license tax, they'd tell you ain't got no business starting a business. I don't care how small it is. So, yeah, again, I understand the impulse, but given the additional staff time required, it just doesn't seem reasonable.
Jackie.
One option to explore, and we don't have to explore tonight, we can do it when we get closer to the budget, is perhaps a compromise between John and Dan, and that would be to, like, raise it to...
No way.
Raise it to $100, but it's not due until the first... until they've been in business for 6 months. And that gives them time to not be being nickeled and dimed as they get started, and it gives them more money. Steve doesn't like it, so never mind.
Well, that's a real administrative issue there. I mean, that really cost us because
then you have to bill twice,
and,
right?
And the other issue is, in changing this, I mean, we're billing.
Now.
We're billing now because these things are due July 1, and if you make a change...
Never mind.
It makes it. Look at making rebates, which is another cost, or
no. That's okay.
Or looking at somehow
let's
delaying.
Let's leave this for now.
Yeah.
Forgive me. Something to add.
Yeah.
You know, think about it some more.
I'll just say I think it could make sense to have a really low, you know, to have one really low category like under $25,000 for, you know, somebody who's got basically a home-based business or something like that, and have that be like $25, something like that. But otherwise, basically, you know, if you're in the more in the, if you're getting on up more toward $100,000, I'm with John, and we ought to increase it rather than decrease it. But
And that's actually what I proposed.
Yeah, no, it is. It is effectively because you were proposing we go to 75 basically for the higher end of that range. Anyway, maybe let me suggest this. If Dan, if you're still interested in this topic, could you talk to maybe meet with some of the TAN staff and see whether there's any particular specific proposal you'd like to put forward to the board so that the board can make a decision, because obviously kind of the way this is here, it's sort of freeform enough that there's about a million different ways you could do it, and it's difficult to kind of get a sense of what the majority of the board is thinking about any particular approach to it. Mm-hmm. So if we can approach it that way, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I feel like. $50 is cheap.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're going to start a business, you're going to subtract that cost for your income taxes anyway. Right. So, you know, I wouldn't mind increasing it, but I'm not yet persuaded that decreasing it is what's best.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll leave it at this point to you, Dan, if you want to put a specific proposal out there at some point. Okay. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Item six is the note. James, I don't know if there's any. This is not something the board had asked, but it's just a reminder to you all about the potential funding for the homeless position that Chairman Carey mentioned to you all last week. James, anything you need to say?
No, I think it's clear. If you decide to fund that position, we need to take the money from somewhere, and this would be an item that should come out of the Human Services. And as we do our final deliberations, I'd like to know what your thinking is on it. If you're not thinking about supporting it, then we can go ahead and allocate it.
Has the Human Services Advisory Board already had its various funding hearings for the different applications?
We're not done yet.
With the process right now.
It's in the process.
So, but I did mention to
you know,
them.
I just have to say that I think what would be richly deserved is for the county to have to apply to the Human Services Advisory Board for funding and have their proposal considered in comparison with other possible applications, speaking as a, you know, not a former applicant in that pool, but a just having applied for a lot of grants.
Right.
You know, I guess one question about it always is at what level is the decision making based on the merits of the application, and at what level does it get down to the politics of the situation? And I think the Board of Aldermen has always tried to be very careful to try and stay out of the politics of the situation and look at the merits of applications. So, I mean, I'm sort of kidding. But I'm sort of not.
Well, let me just say that I'm the liaison to the Human Services Advisory Committee, and they take their work very seriously, and they really go through the applications with a fine-tooth comb. And so, you know, I would say that to let the board know that they should have supreme confidence in them, because they're asking the tough questions, and they're asking whether or not there is sustained progress with what people are asking for the monies for.
Well, then can I, with seriousness, I mean, I don't really expect the county to literally apply, but can I suggest that we just actually refer that question to the Human Services Advisory Board and ask them for their best thought about whether it's $8,000 we've been asked for?
$8,000.
Out of about $100,000 or so in our Human Services budget. I mean, I think if the Human Services Advisory Board is persuaded that this is an important priority, then they would be in the best position to let us know.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Let's approach it that way.
Can I go back to the previous item for a quick second?
It sounded like the manager wanted to comment further on this.
Okay. No,
it was a different matter.
Okay. So I did these numbers while we were sitting here, and if we went $25 for up to $25,000, $50 for up to $50,000, and $100 for $50 to $100, it totals up to $6,900 revenue, which is an increase of $1,900 over the budget.
I could support that.
How's that sit with you all?
That sounds like the kind of thing we're looking for.
it's more on the ballpark.
Again, I point out the issue is we're billing now for because they're due July 1st.
Could we institute it next year?
Or can we institute it for new businesses?
As of July 1st? In other words, applications that come in July 1st?
I'm looking to our attorney about whether that would be considered discriminatory or not.
So well, why don't we?
It has to be done on a fiscal year basis. I think you establish the rates. I believe on a fiscal year basis. So you'd be in other words, if you're establishing it now for the next fiscal year, that's what the rate would be during that fiscal year. So I guess the answer is it would either do it for this year or for next year, but not have some of the people pay one rate during the same fiscal year as somebody else.
When you paid in relation to the beginning of the fiscal year.
Why don't we put this in the hopper then for 08-09?
Right.
No, but wouldn't we be in the same position for 08-09 if we decide?
Why don't we decide now what our issue
we'd bring back very early, sort of separate from the budget process.
Okay.
That
works.
It could be prepared in advance, we're also depending on how quickly things move, but in staff's comprehensive ordinance review, there are going to be a lot of changes in administration, some fees and charges schedules, right? So
possibly, but wouldn't probably impact this. You know, I would suggest if this is something you all are comfortable with, probably maybe go ahead and do it as part of this budget process and just make it effective July next year. That gives everybody, that gives us and the community plenty of time to be aware of what the changes would be.
I think the board's comfortable with that. So we'll plan on, that'll be essentially effective. We'll have a formal resolution at some point later this year or something, but this calendar year, but early in 2008, but it will make it effective for the 08-09 fiscal year. All right.
And maybe between now and then, Bing could double check my math.
Bing
will squeeze it into her schedule somewhere in the next year and a half.
Since you did that year and a half.
Okay. Mr. Manager.
I was going to say on this item, if you look at, I guess, the last page, that just shows you the potential tax impact of all the things that you all had inquired about last week. And, of course, all you ask about adds to the bottom line.
Right.
So.
Well, it sounds like we will explore ways to do the recycling in a way that's revenue neutral.
Basically revenue neutral. We can use existing.
Okay, and I'm assuming there weren't too many comments about it, but I'm assuming the board is receptive to pursuing that. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So then the question really at this point for the board is whether we want to do anything with town commons reservation fees and
the health insurance.
And the question of a health insurance stipend for part-time permanent employees. And I guess my comment is I think we ought to do both of those things, personally. But
I agree. We need to do both of those things. When it comes to health insurance, it's our responsibility. And just because the federal government won't get its act together and pass a national health care plan doesn't mean that local governments can also shirk their responsibilities to their employees. So I support that and urge you to get the letter out, Mark, because I'm sure that'll just change the entire picture of national health care.
So. As you say, I think they're waiting to hear from me.
Yeah, they are.
do any of the other board members want to express an opinion at this point about either of those issues?
Well,
I do.
Okay. Well, we'll go, John.
Briefly, I mean, I really, I wasn't here when the money presented the budget, but I did have the private meeting before the budget, so I know all the details of it, and I just want to thank him and the staff for putting together a very frugal and effective budget, and we really talked and dig into this issue of healthcare and insurance, and I prefer to follow the recommendation of the manager in this issue, given the fact that he's the one who knows this stuff and evaluate the people and you know, negotiate their salaries and interview them and hire them and fire them. I don't want to, I feel it is micromanaging to get into the, you know, for X number of people, these people really need to have these benefits. If we're going to do that, I think that should be part of, you know, the big picture review of benefits of the town. I'm not just going to dig into this. It is a 10,000 or 18,000 if we go with the with the big picture.
No,
it'd be 35,000. Or 25. So unless, you know, we hit a good year or we hit the lottery or or I see income coming from somewhere, I prefer to stick with the staff recommendation, the manager's recommendation on this issue, and suggest not to make any changes when it comes to staff benefits.
The manager.
While I have you on the spot, John, could you? What is your thought about the town commons reservation fee?
I'm okay with it. I mean, I think it increments. I mean, too many tiers means more work, more room for mistakes, more time to look for it. I mean, if it's a group of folks who are trying to benefit, I mean, I prefer to just have a two-tier, you know, something you can make a quick decision on it, right, and to look at the chart and see which one it is. I mean, I we're ready to do that for nonprofits and the serving causes that we want to sponsor them. And I mean, there is a lot of ways to get town support that citizens will benefit from it. I'm not clear on who, what audience are we trying to benefit with this range, except create a more administrative nightmare on that.
He had his hand up. So.
Clarifying point about the stipend for the part-timers. I want to make sure you all understand that while you're calling it a health insurance stipend, there will be no obligation for the part-time employee to spend it on health insurance. We cannot require that. That gets into the HIPAA laws and deals with things called adverse selection, and I don't want to tell you more than I know about it, except to tell you we can suggest to the employee that that's what the money is for, but we can't dictate it.
Okay. Joel and then Randy.
Well, I'm neutral on the town commons reservation fee. The only thing I would say is look at it holistically. You have to pay a reservation fee to go to the other parks and stuff. And if you treat and the other parks, unless, you know. And so I look at it that, but it's such a revenue neutral loss that I can live with it. But the thing that we need to think about it holistically is what happens, for example, if you have people that say, well, if I use the town commons, I don't have to pay a fee. But if I use Anderson Park, I have to pay a fee. And if I use Wilson Park, I have to pay a fee. And I just would tell you the fee is cheap. It's a bargain. It's only, I mean, it really is a bargain. It's a steal. Because I've used both Wilson Park and Anderson Park for birthday parties. And I know my church has used it for the annual Sunday school picnic. And it's a steal on both ways. So, you know, it would be nice to give people a reduction. I'm not opposed to it that I would, you know, not support the budget if we vote for it. So I'm neutral on that one, but I just wanted you to look at it sort of in a like a holistic of what we do with the other parks. You know, the health insurance thing, you know, I agree with the staff's recommendation. And I am not, you know, I am certainly empathetic and sympathetic because I have been uninsured before, insured partly. I'm on the state plan, so you can make your
so you're partly insured.
You know, and thankful for the insurance that I do have. But I think when you look at it as a whole, I'm going to have to agree with Alderman Herrera that if we're going to make this change, we should wait and look at benefits for everyone. And I would just say to the board, we're talking about making a change with regards to retirees, which is a major change as well. And it's like we're almost shifting one change, one to another, and the retirees have given long-time service to the town. That's why they are a retiree. And so, you know, that would be my thinking, if people can persuade me better. I mean, I understand the emotional having to write a check and not have insurance. So I'm empathetic and sympathetic because I've been in that position. But also, I think we have to also look at as a whole to the entire organization. And, again, that $1,500 does not have to be used for health insurance if people decide not to do it.
All right. Which one do you want me to weigh in on first?
It doesn't matter. Whatever order you like. And then we're coming over here to Al.
Okay. Well, town comments. You know, I agree with a lot of what Joel has said because when you look at a reservation of 4 hours or less, well, maybe, you know, if we changed it and it was 2 hours or less because 4 hours or less, you could say, well, a $25 reservation, $25 an hour, that's reasonable. And a four-hour event could be a pretty big event. So, you know, to me, I'm really concerned about cutting areas of potential revenue. And since we do not know really what this is going to continue to generate for us, especially as people see Town Commons as being a real viable space, I guess at this point I'm not willing to, you know, relinquish what we could earn from that the reservations on that space. It's very hard to reserve space right in town. It's impossible. And there you have a beautiful space. So I'm inclined, I'd be willing to look at 2 hours or less being a freebie. But once you go into 4 hours, you could hold a wedding, for goodness sake. So, you know.
People have.
So that's my.
Now we're not bathrooms.
Well, then you pay the other $50 or whatever.
You're probably being off-duty cop, too.
That's my position on that. In regards to the part-timers insurance, I absolutely hate that we don't have universal health care in this country. I absolutely hate it. It drives me crazy. I almost feel like the proposal to do this, though, is really sandwiching us between the retirees, which we talked some about this year, and there's a major concern for them, you know, and the folks who are part-time. And I think the fact that the part-timers have, you know, an option with how they want to spend the money is of concern. Now, I had one question that came up last time. I want a clarification on this, which is the question of the market risk. With this potential plan, that would not put us into a market risk situation?
It'd have no impact because the employees would be free to choose whatever plan in the private sector they wanted to or not, and it simply would be neutral in terms of any impact on the town's health insurance plan.
Okay, so if they chose, it doesn't affect us?
That's right.
Okay. I'm not settled on that topic. I think it's really of concern to me.
Alex and then Dan.
Yeah, I think I would echo on the stipend issue, Randy's conundrum. You know, I'm so conflicted, as De Niro once said. The big issue is that it simply amounts to a cash stipend, which is essentially a cash bonus, which is being awarded outside our normal pay and classification system. And that's kind of a problem. If this were a direct benefit that we could provide, which would ensure that benefit was extended, I would be sorely tempted at this price to go along with it. So, yeah, I'm conflicted about it and inclined to think that for this budget season, that's just not a doer, and that maybe in the next go-round we need to think about it a little bit more. On the town commons reservation fee issue, I think some good arguments were here we are gnashing over $2,500, but every $2,500 is $2,500, and it adds up. So, some of the cheap stuff that I used to do to staff, this is like big money compared to and in that vein, this is also just sort of a philosophical notion that I arrived at as the discussion went around the table, which is when you reserve the space, you're reserving the space to the exclusion of everyone else. Families and individuals can come use the space as you like. Great, knock yourselves out. And it seems to me that there should be a premium when you get to have it all to yourself and can tell other people, no, this is our event, see you later. So I'm inclined, frankly, to leave the schedule as it is.
So I have a question and then a comment. Steve, do we have any information, even anecdotally, about these 7 part-time employees, whether, in fact, they're medically insured, whether they're on spouse insurance, whether they're uninsured, or whether this stipend might be used?
It would be anecdotally. Desiree may know more than I know. I think most, if not all, of these 7 people have coverage of some sort already. And, of course, let me just add, when they came to work for the town, they came with the understanding there were no health insurance benefits associated with those positions. Yeah. But the more important thing to keep in mind is these are 7 individuals, and we don't want to lose sight of that, but these 7 individuals tomorrow may not be the same 7 people in those positions. So the condition today can be very different the next day. So we really, I think, need to think about it in terms of what's appropriate for the positions and not the individuals, because they're going to change.
Right, although it still helps to understand, what the conditions tend to be.
There may be some limit to our ability to ask the individual.
I'm not suggesting we have.
I believe most, if not all, of those folks are currently covered.
I do know that at least 3 of our 7 current part-timers, are retired state employees. And,
presumably covered,
but I
don't. And there's a 4th employee who's told me without being solicited that they had coverage.
So the other comment I had was on just a couple points on the town commons fee. One is that I don't think we should focus too much on the suggested cost, because I don't know if you all looked closely at the spreadsheet that Desiree sent us a couple months ago on that, but that indicated that exclusive of the really, really free market, the annual revenue has been $600 or $700 each year. And it's very possible that if the fee continued, that the really free market might go elsewhere, because my understanding is that the donor who's been paying their fee is committed through this fiscal year and not beyond that. So, it may be that the suggested revenue just won't pan out, but we don't really know. The other thing in response to Alex's thought about, people getting exclusive use for this, that, it may not be, I think that may not be necessary, because I think really what we're looking at is that the people reserving at that time a situation where they themselves cannot be excluded, where, in other words, they can have certainty that their event can be accommodated, and it may be workable that someone else could come in and say, well, we want to be there too, and that could be accommodated as well. So I don't know that, you know, because we have this category that Anita has suggested of what would potentially be proposed as a no-cost reservation, and it seems to be possible that that might not have to be an exclusive use.
Let me.
Be after her.
Okay. If I could just stay on that topic for just a second and ask a question, because I think the last time I reserved some space over at the Century Center, there was a fee differential depending on whether – there were two different fees. One was for if my event was open to the – free and open to the public, and there was a different fee, a higher fee that I would have to pay if the event was either private or I was charging admission. Whatever the difference between
right.
those two things may really be. So, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is you're saying what the staff report discusses, if I'm right, is the town commons reservations that don't use electricity or staff time for under 4 hours and that are open to the public. Is that right?
No, I was not making that difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because currently we don't necessarily make that difference. If it unless they are raising money or taking some type of admission fee, we don't make that separation. We don't make it apart.
Okay, your proposal was money's not changing hands.
Right. That's because...
Well, that's a little bit different. That's not necessarily exactly the same as saying that it's open to the public.
Right. That's completely different.
Okay.
And we have that separation at Century Center, but we don't have it at the parks.
Okay. Jackie.
Gosh, in philosophy, there's an old argument about the tragedy of the commons, and it sounds like we're going there where... If everybody can use the commons, then nobody takes care of the commons and it falls apart. I always thought that I didn't buy that argument. And I find it really interesting that we're discussing the common of healthcare provision at the same time that we're discussing the town commons, because somehow they're linked. With healthcare, members of this board can get healthcare through the town, right?
Yes.
And that is, I don't have it, so we can buy into it, right? We're not, it's not free for board members, right? But didn't...
That's not right. It is free.
It is free for board members.
It costs something, but yeah.
There's no charge to the board members. But visual coverage for those who choose it, that's been a long-standing...
Well, no, actually, that was came in under Mike Nelson because he wanted health insurance.
Longer than my tenure.
right before you. Mike wanted that. But we're part-time employees. So why does the system let us do it? Because in other ways, we're classified as part-time employees, and so I would think that other part-time employees should have at least the privilege of buying into the system.
You're not part-time employees. It's just the way the contracts were written at the time. We can get into a real long discussion. The bottom line, though, is this. If part-time employees are added to the town's health insurance, in the long run, it will likely cost everybody more money. And if that's a decision the board wants to make, then the board is free to make that. But it will probably limit the market for us in the future. And we've done everything we know to do to hold down cost. My concern, I've said this to you all individually and collectively, is we over time run the risk of not being able to afford decent coverage for anybody.
Okay, it's an unconscionable position for us to be put into.
Yeah, there's no happy answers.
There's no happy answer. Yeah. That's all.
Joel.
Well, I just say, and I don't want to sound like Simon Legree, but, for those of you who know who Simon Legree is. He's a villain. I am giving away my age. It's a difficult decision, and I would love to give part-time employees health insurance, but when you look at the entire organization as a whole, we have to keep the entire organization as a whole healthy. And speaking from one who pays a premium for health insurance coverage for her dependents, and it increasingly is going up, and the value for what you get is increasingly being reduced. Mm-hmm. I think we would have a difficult time as an organization at least maintaining the type of staff that we have now. Because if the issue is going to be health insurance, people will say to themselves, if I can get better health insurance and be a city employee somewhere else, and I don't have to drive no more than 15 minutes away, or I could take the bus, then they're going to do it. And when you have a system of where you have to manage, which is very difficult to manage, large amounts of turnover. And sometimes people make that decision based upon that type, that kind of job decision is made that way. I'm not saying that I'm leaving the state employees. I'm going to say that right now. It's a decision.
The answer to this problem doesn't lie with this board.
That's
the problem.
You're absolutely right about that. Ultimately, let me say this. We are going to have a public hearing on the manager's proposed budget. When will that be, Mr. Manager? Do you have that date?
May 22nd.
So I think while it's helpful. I only wanted people to kind of explicitly weigh in on these things because I think it's helpful to the manager in terms of making any adjustments in his proposed budget. But all the items we discussed tonight are relatively modest. And so, the ultimate decision will come after that public hearing at a meeting. When are you tentatively expecting us to vote on the budget?
June 19th.
So the fact is that we have about 6 weeks in which to come to our final conclusions about these different issues and perhaps a few others that may arise at our public hearing. But I think this has been an instructive discussion so far, and probably what we need to do is move on to having our public hearing when you had a tentative date scheduled for another budget work session, is that right?
If the board feels a need, we had tentatively put the date of May 17th, which is a week from Thursday. The last couple of years, the board has chosen not to have that second work session.
Alex?
Unless anybody else feels differently, I think we've kind of exhausted the subject matter at hand without getting input from the public, and basically now all we need to do is hear from folks and vote.
Yeah, we could talk about it more, but we can't decide it more.
I think everybody went else. I have more items to put on the table.
Okay, well, now would be the time to ask any additional questions. But
okay, I have a list.
You can be excused if you need to go.
So I have three questions to do with format, just kind of looking to the future, and one is just wondering, as we were just talking about the second work session, whether it wouldn't be better to schedule that after the public hearing to give us work session time to talk about anything the public might bring to us. And I'm not suggesting we change the schedule for this year, but for the future, that's something we might think about. Second is in the decision review packet, again, this is for the future, I think it would be helpful to show two things. One is the return on investment, where applicable, because we got a couple items where we're going to see savings pretty immediately and some pretty significantly compared to the cost. And I think right in the table on the first page, that should show up. So for us and any citizen who looks at it, we can see that not all of these costs are as high as they appear to be. And also to more clearly show in the narrative the implication for not taking a proposed action, which it's in there, but it's hard to get that out sometime. And also the final thing on that, again, looking to the future, is that for budget line items, if there are items that show a significant change between either trends or the current year budget, it would be nice to footnote those with an explanation of what the reasons might be for those. And I thought about whether I could define what significant change was and decided I couldn't.
10%?
That's a very subjective thing that's going to vary from page to page in the budget.
10%?
Well, if 10% of 1,000 goes to 900, we might not need that. Certainly 10% of 100,000 to 90,000, we might want to know about. That's why, you know, I didn't see.
Yeah.
Well, let's say less than 100,000 or greater than 100,000. Well, we know 100,000 would be a big change.
Okay,
1% that is something to hear about that. Right. I mean, we could say that or a 10% increase. Because if there's a reduction, we're happy about that.
Right.
I think we're more concerned about, I mean, I don't want staff to have to do, I mean, I know these are time intensive, and so if there's a large increase or decrease in revenue, which was indicated by, you know, 8%, of the sales tax, then I'd want to know about that. But if there was a decrease in fuel by 10%, I'd just be happy and people would note it.
Right. Increases is what that would apply to.
Okay.
Randy.
I'm not done, but if
you
want to
comment.
You're
not done. Go for it.
Okay.
And then I'll jump in.
Steve, could you comment a little bit just for, I guess for myself and people who might be watching, how you analyze the potential of interdepartmental cost savings? Because what we see in the budget is a breakdown department by department, but I assume that there's areas where you have ways of looking for sharing costs or getting economies of scale or whatnot. And I'm just wondering if there's a methodology to that.
Well, I mean, we look at it, we do, for example, with our fleet maintenance program or our fleet purchasing program, that's an interdepartmental program where our fleet maintenance manager in the back really takes a look at the vehicles across departmental lines. You know, we have some vehicles that are shared among more than one department. You know, we have several vehicles here that are pool vehicles. And then, you know, we look at whether or not we can share other vehicles, and that's something that's looked at across departmental lines. We don't just look department by department. Also, another specific example is between Public Works and Recreation and Parks, because Public Works provides most of the maintenance for the parks facilities. There are lots of opportunities for those folks to work together and try to save money, and they do that. Fire and police work together. With this past year, for example, we looked at the new 800 megahertz radio systems. We were able to pool money between both police and fire to purchase those radios without regard for whose money it was, and we were able to reduce our total cost by a grant application in the amount of $75,000 that was done through the fire department but benefited both fire and police. We also this coming year, we're actually putting all of our copiers under one contract. We're able to save money on a per-copy basis by putting the various copiers in different departments under one contract. We also share cell phone minutes interdepartmentally so that we get a better deal by that sort of thing. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, that's helpful. And, maybe that's something else that if it's not a lot of extra work in future budgets, it's like if there's new savings being realized through those kind of means to highlight those for us, I think would be helpful to know because, it certainly alerts us to where, you all, because we want to see where, good savings are being made. That's helpful to us and I think the community. Next point has to do with the Century Center, which, as I recall, we got our report on utilization of the Century Center in the late fall. And So I don't really, I didn't have that handy and I don't recall it, but my sense is that weekday, during the daytime, during the week, that the Century Center is underutilized. Is that correct? That there's not a lot of use of the big hall and maybe the downstairs meeting room?
Weekends and evenings. Yeah.
And have you looked at or thought about possible proactive ways to increase revenue and utilization of those spaces, whether, you know, whoever might need meeting space, large meetings or even smaller meetings on weekdays, you know, perhaps for business purposes or educational purposes or conferences, those kinds of things?
Yes, we go out and try to do some marketing. We're a member of the Chamber of Commerce, so, you know, we let them know that it's available, and we try to market the facility. Whenever we can participate in various fairs or things of that nature, we go out and try to market the facility. So we try to do that as much as we can.
And do you work with the Visitors Bureau as well?
Yes,
in
we
that
do.
Regard, to like
and our yes, and our information is comes out in their brochure and literature as well.
Okay, thank you. I had a question about on page 7. There's reference to a map certification study to include an oncoming subdivision. It's a $27,000 cost. And is that a study that's specific to a particular development? Am I understanding that correctly? It's on page VII. So Roman numeral 7. At the top, in that very
first. That's a combination of costs. Toward that one, you have to break down right in front of you.
I'd like to get that to you in a minute.
That's not, that cost is inclusive of all of those things in that sentence. So it's not just that.
Oh, I see. So that's just a part of that.
Yeah, we're trying to give you the highlights and not.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess my specific question is if there are map studies that are specific to a particular development, whether that oughtn't to be something that's passed along to the developer as a charge rather than borne by the town. And, of course, I don't know how much that is, if it's since that's a combination.
We can find out. I don't know.
Maybe that's something to look at in terms of fees. On the next page, this is just something I wanted to mention. You know, there's the mention of reduced tipping fee expenses that gave us some savings. And in January, we talked about the possibility of looking at ideas for additional source reduction for solid waste. And I guess just to mention that in passing is something that, you know, is there as a way to have additional savings in years ahead. And, you know, so we should continue to look at that.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
But because they're going to build the transfer station, unless, of course, Chapel Hill shows some cojones and lots of it, we're going to have to pay additional fees to somebody else's landfill, not in the county. So some other county is going, we're going to have to pay one way or the other. We're going to have to pay whatever they pay at the transfer station, plus the cost of that will be incorporated.
True.
So I don't know if we're going to get any savings. I'm sorry.
I don't know if we're going to get any savings, quite frankly.
Are
except
you suggesting
for gas.
That there would no longer be a weight or volume-based fee under the transfer station?
Well, I think they will have a weight fee, but you're also going to have the cost of they're going to include in whatever contract they had because, you know, we made the visit together. Part of their costs are included in the amount of fuel that they're going to have to pay for wherever they're going to put that trash.
Mm-hmm. Right. So my only point is that we're still going to see savings if we're able to reduce the amount of trash we send over there. You know, it may not.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put any confidence in that. I'll put you that way.
So
I, and I don't think we should make the citizens have the expectation that they're going to be saving.
So is your understanding then that there would be a fixed fee regardless of how much waste Carborough sends through the transfer station? Is that
I
right?
think there's going to be a fixed fee for getting it to the transfer station. I think
the cost of recycling.
And I think there's also going to be a cost for the weight of whatever we send to whatever landfill they're going to make a contract with to get rid of the refuse.
And we're not going to pay for that weight?
I don't know. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what is presented to us. But
well, if that's an open question, then you know, it'll be important to find the answer for sure. Okay. Looking at the next page, page X.
Dan, could I go back to that question about the mapping? We got the answer.
Okay.
When we get new subdivisions on and when we take streets into the town street system, we have to do a map certification for reimbursement for Powell bill funds.
Okay.
That's $4,600 out of that amount that we paid.
And we do get reimbursed.
We get a Powell bill. Normally more than that back over time through the Powell bill monies.
Okay, great. So my next question has to do with the schedule of the sidewalk bond program. And remember, Steve, I sent you the email about whether we can go into 2010-11 fiscal year, which apparently we can on those. So I guess I'm interested in knowing the implication of moving part of that program of the next 3 years, 07, 08, and 09, into 2010. And obviously that means, you know, looking at how that would spread out with the rest of the CIP. But it seems like that we might be able to have perhaps a small savings this coming fiscal year and maybe a slightly more significant savings in 08 or 09 when we'll need it more, at least according to what we're anticipating. But I couldn't really look ahead from the information I have to understand how that might then play out in 2010, 2011, whether that might be something worth doing. And also in terms of, you know, the actual planning of the sidewalk projects itself, whether we have the flexibility to maneuver across those years. So, but I thought it was something worth looking at, that, you know, whether we could delay certain increases in the budget a little bit through that.
I certainly think that flexibility is possible, and I'd ask George to be prepared to chime in here. I guess for the next phase, I think we're far enough along that I would hope we'd be able to move forward on that phase and then maybe step back and look at some of the future phases. One of my concerns is we've seen prices increase dramatically since the bond referendum in 2003, and the longer we put off moving forward on construction, I think it becomes more likely we don't build what the board had said you wanted to build. And, you know, the one in the last phase, for example, as I recall, is Rogers Road, which is a huge chunk. If we shove all this out several years, that and some of those other projects, it may become very difficult to have enough money to do the projects.
So that could turn out to be a false economy.
It could be. I mean, I can't sit here today and have a crystal ball and tell you for sure, but if the past few years is any indication of what the next few will be like, we've seen just astronomical increases in cost.
I can share with you that's not even really a new phenomenon. That phenomenon is what's responsible for the leapfrog dysfunctionality of NCDOT's programming and why stuff gets pushed back because it's not funded enough, but it's not funded enough because it's been sitting in the hopper for however many years, and the cost of the project has inflated by maybe 50%. So, you know, it's just vapor dollars, but those fixed costs, or rather not fixed costs, those constantly rising costs of construction are affecting us as well in this regard.
Please don't identify nuts.
No, I think one of the other things that impact us a lot, though, is
it is the timing. As you know, things have gotten significantly delayed, and a lot of that has to do with the process that we've gone through. And like we've said that before, is we're still working on some design issues to try to make as many people happy as possible. So that we pay that not only in additional engineering costs, but we also pay that in delays and rising construction costs as well. Then there's limited staffing too to do the projects. You know, we hired somebody last year who works full time on getting easements and right of way, and we are making progress. We should have three enhancement projects that have been on the burner here, or the back burner, for a long time, finally ready to go for bid, and three other bond projects. And I'll just be honest with you, I haven't even met with the folks on Rogers Road yet. We're as a staff, we work hard to move forward. So that's a function of it. Also, that's part of the delay. And I, you know, we don't particularly want that because of the rising construction costs. So we have the enhancement projects and three of the 10 remaining phase one sidewalk projects, hopefully out for bid this year, and then the balance, the six or seven remaining ones, hopefully next year. But that's up to, as we presented before too, there's concerns about the rising costs, and we'll, once we get through this next group that we put out for bid, we'll kind of again see where our status is, as we've given you updates before on how much the bonding is buying in terms of the projects.
One thing on the app that might get to where you may be interested in going, Dan, almost by default, is the process that we're using, because it has been very involved with the neighborhoods, and we've taken a lot of time to try to meet individual needs as much as possible, and negotiating the easements and rights of way has been a very, very slow process, and so some of it may get put off just simply because of the process, but I think if we go into it now anticipating putting the bulk of the remaining projects off for a couple more years, then I am very concerned about the cost that may be involved in that.
Yeah, I'm only suggesting, you know, a modest adjustment, you know, something that might have, you know, maybe a penny or two tax impact, you know, over next year or the year after, whatever at the most. But I also want to, you know, be clear that I understand that, you know, this is one expense that is specifically authorized by the citizens, and that we do want to get the most out of that bond authorization as we can. So, next item I have a question is on page 3-11 about the various advisory board budgets. And this is one thing I guess two questions on that. One is, there's a lot of difference among those budgets, including among the budgets for boards that really don't spend very much, apparently, during the year. So, you know, looking at that all told, you know, we might have room there to budget, a couple, $2,000 or $3,000 less, you know, by looking at each of those line items. And again, that's an insignificant number, as, you know, we were talking about in reference to some of the possible increases a few minutes ago. But anyway, it's something to look at. And also, I was curious about the recognition banquet, which I thought was a very good event again this year, but I noticed that the cost went up about 40% from our 2005-06 actual, which seems like a large increase. And so I don't know if the actual costs of food and such went up that much, or if we've changed our format, but maybe, you know, perhaps there might be room for a little bit of savings there as well.
The food was 40% better this year.
And I just want to say, you know, they volunteer a lot of hours, a lot of hours for, and we want to encourage people. And the recognition banquet is probably the the only recognition they get, because people aren't like at the end of planning board meetings, oh, great job, great job. So, I mean.
Far from it.
Yeah, they get yelled at for free.
So, I mean, you know, if it was an exorbitant amount of money, I would be scared, and we can look at it, but if the food was better or not. Sorry, I couldn't be
yeah.
here.
Well, good food is always worth paying for if you can afford
and, you
it.
Know, but, I just would say.
No, I agree. And again, we're looking at a small amount, right. And you know, if there's little bit to save without, you know, making the event less fully festive and fun as it was. And anyway, question on page 317. This is just something I'm not familiar with. What is the cable TV consultation? That's a $5,000 line item under government.
TJ Cog.
Yeah. We're involved with a consortium with Triangle J. Bob Seppi, who I think has been here to speak with you all, and we all pool our resources to deal with the cable industry.
He's worth it.
Okay.
He's a bulldog.
Very nice bulldog. Yeah.
You may get legislated out of existence at some point, but okay.
Another just question that I had under human resources, noticing that the average days to hire went up significantly this year and is expected to drop again in the coming year. And I'm just curious to know what that increase was attributed to.
Sometimes that depends on how quickly the departments fill the vacancies, and sometimes we offer the positions to candidates, and for some reason they may not accept our offer, so that makes it go out a little bit longer.
So you really, it's just situational.
That's correct.
Okay.
Sorry, Dan. Got to turn into a pumpkin. I got to be in Durham in the morning to do the TAC, so.
That's fine, Alan.
You know, I'm following you in a little bit.
I'm Mormonettes, and Joel and I will find our glass slippers.
And I guess the other question under human resources is there's a pretty big increase in the organizational development line.
That is correct. We were only paying for, the fire department was paying for the Carolina Fitness memberships for their department out of their budget, and we added the fire department to human resources, so our memberships for our gym are completely paid out of this line item.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm almost there. This is under Parks and Rec. I was looking at Chapter 10, pages 11, 13, 15. And notice a total of about $300,000 in temporary and part-time positions budgeted in the Parks and Recreation Department. And I assume a lot of that is seasonal in terms of people you need for recreation programs. But I just wanted to raise the question if you feel like you've fully explored where there might be opportunities for creating perhaps more permanent staff through those positions, and you know, having fewer people to manage and less turnover in some of those responsible areas.
Yes, and Dan, to answer your question, we have done that. When Steve came on board, we probably had twice as many part-time employees, but we have tried to bring in less employees and provide them more hours within reason. We also try to streamline as best as possible, and that's why we were requesting the part-time permanent position at the Century Center. We did pool the money that we have, so mm-hmm. we do that when we can. And we do have a lot less positions than we had 3 to 4 years ago.
Okay, thank you. And the last item, and this is actually something that I've heard from several citizens about, which is, and let me preface by saying that my perception is that we have a great staff for the town, and I want us to be doing what we can to keep the staff we have and let them know we value them. But there's a perception in the community that the level of increases that we're giving are not in line with what people say in state government are receiving, or some people who
don't
are
use state government as the standard for increases.
Okay.
Say two state employees.
But I guess, and I know you all do benchmarks on both our compensation rates, and I assume on the schedules for raises as well. And you know, so I'm really just asking for the benefit of the community that might be watching, if you could talk a little bit on those benchmarks and how what we're doing is comparing to other municipalities, and not to the state government, but you know, to the people perhaps that who might like to hire some of Harborough's fine employees away from us if they could get the chance. Or.
Well, of course, you know, every several years we do a market analysis, and we have benchmark positions that we use, and we have benchmark communities in the area that we benchmark against. And I guess we did that
two years ago.
And we were generally in good shape. And then in those other years, you'll recall a part of our pay-for-performance system includes a cost-of-living component. This year, it's proposed to be 2.5%. And what happens is our minimum and maximums of each pay grade are increased by that amount so that we can hopefully keep up with the market. The last information we got from the North Carolina League of Municipalities, I guess it was last month, where they've been doing some surveying of municipalities across the state. When you look at our population range of 10,000 to 25,000, we're right in line with the average expected increases to be granted. Obviously, nobody's budget's adopted yet, so these are all just proposals. But the average of somewhere around 5% for our employees, which would be anywhere from a 3% to 5.5% based on performance, is in line with the market that we feel like we compete against.
And I do want to say, because you came on the board after this, in prior years, we had a problem where we were hiring people at a higher entry level than some current employees who had been employed with the town for several years. And so the board, I guess about 2001, 2002, made a conscious effort to try to bring everybody to the midpoint so we wouldn't stop nickel and diamond people and then be at a position where we had to expend a lot of funds and a lot of tax money to keep people
compression.
Yeah. And 2 years ago, when the board approved the new compensation plan, the new pay-for-performance plan, one of the things that Becky Veazey, our consultant, did say to the board that it's important to try to maintain this at a decent level every year and do it on performance so that we have the opportunity for our employees to move up through the ranks and feel like they've got an opportunity to advance through the pay grade, and the board in the last several years has been very good about supporting that. And I want to put a plug in for our employees, and I'm biased, and I'll admit that bias, but we have a very dedicated group of employees, and we add very few employees. We are routinely asking our employees to do more and more. The workload doesn't lighten. You'll note the only employee to be paid directly by the town of Carrboro next year in this proposed budget is one firefighter, and that's in anticipation of cranking up the new fire station in the not-too-distant future, hopefully. And in this current year, we added one engineering technician to help out with all the special projects that are going on in public works, and five firefighters. So I think we get a lot out of our employees. We have a lot of very committed employees, and you know, I hope that we can continue to pay a fair compensation to all of them, because they're our very most valuable resource. So, end of speech. Sorry for that, but
it's
worth saying, for sure.
I nearly forgot all my questions. No, I only have two, and actually one of them kind of dovetails off of what Dan had asked. So the 2.5 that we're talking about for the benchmarking, the average, is that what's referenced on page 15-6 under service level benefits? Is that what that is?
No.
Okay.
Service level benefits is the one piece of our compensation plan that is not based on performance. That is based on years of service, a longevity.
Okay.
Amount. And that's based on a dollar amount starting for five years?
Yes, yes.
From five to 20 years, there's a graduated scale.
Okay.
And the board a couple years ago adopted a policy that said that that would increase, each range would increase by the cost of living increase for that particular year. So that amount increased by 2.5% next year over what it was for the current year.
So is there a line that reflects that the pay for performance?
Yes.
I just want you to know I'm asking this as an organizational question.
Yeah. It's the assessed pay plan. It's line item 500-203 on page 11-5.
Okay. All right. And the reason I ask is how do you look forward like 3 or 4 years from now with that program with the pay for performance? I mean, I'm looking at 2010, 2011, I'm anticipating things being kind of tight. How do you figure on, you know, what the numbers are going to look like over a period of time? Because it's only been, what, 3 years?
Well, like most everything else we do, we make certain assumptions, understanding they're only assumptions, and when the budget is actually being discussed, that's when the board makes the actual decision. But Bing, when she does the spreadsheet for the five-year plan, makes assumptions about number of employees, makes assumptions about pay for performance, and those are spelled out. She lists what those assumptions are. Hopefully everybody understands, particularly our employees, that those are just assumptions to try to work the model, but they're not guarantees. If we hit an extremely difficult budget year, then those assumptions may not prove to be true. We may have to do something less.
So, I mean, let's take the worst-case scenario. Having been a state employee, a teacher in 1980, you know, our good governor at the time froze our teacher's salaries and
sounds like worst case.
Built a horse show arena with our salary. And some of you might remember that.
I wasn't here at the time, but the employees were impacted here as well because there were very small lump sum amounts given that for a couple of years straight, I think the 2 years before I came, which over time destroys the integrity of the pay plan. But that doesn't mean in a particular year something like that might not have to
it's reviewed annually. That's what I'm getting at.
There's no given.
Okay. And my second question was, you know, we spent a lot of time at the retreat talking about next steps with economic development. And I was wondering with this budget, I couldn't find where we, you know, if we wanted to, build in some additional programming after we get the leakage analysis and, look for some further consultation, whatever, where would money come from for that? Is there money for that, or would that be something that would have to be put aside? Because I feel we're in a really good place right now to move forward, and with the work that, you know, James is looking at in terms of leakage analysis and things that we talked about at the retreat, we talked about the potential of, you know, next steps. So I was wondering if there was monies that could support that, and if so, where would it come from?
There is no money in this budget to do anything of significance beyond what we've been doing.
Okay. Well,
can I follow on that? Because I guess, I don't know if you were going to get to this, Randy. It looked like you were about to drop that. But it seems to me, and we may not need to spend it, but we ought to have a few thousand dollars in economic development for unspecified, that if next winter or next spring we make some progress and discover that there's something we want to do that has some cost attached to it, that, you know, that we have the funds available.
Well, let me say there's in this budget, as there has been for the last several years, there is a $15,000 board contingency fund, and that is a place that the board could tap into. It's not designated for anything in particular, and if you needed a few thousand dollars to bring in a consultant or to do a workshop or whatever, that would be the first place I would suggest taking a look at.
And okay, previous boards have used the contingency fund to do that.
We did it in a small way this year, actually. Yeah.
So, there's not that line item in the economic development budget, but that pot of money is available to the board.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
And you all are the only ones that can appropriate that.
But let's not be spendthrift.
Yeah, right. That's good. You got to make it through a whole year, and you don't have to spend it all. So
exactly right.
Okay. With that, I think our next step will be to proceed to our public hearing on May 22nd, and we'll look forward to seeing all of you then, if not before.
Move we adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you.